Well, this is old Killer Spade 10 on the Happy Go Lucky show here. I'd like to compliment Dad on a very fine commentary of his road work. I'm really interested in this stuff, and I'm serious about that. I was real interested in hearing about this new process you got, and I only have one question. You wrote in your letter what PCC was. The only way I can figure it out is permanent concrete. I wish you'd verify this for me, please, Dad. And I'll say hello, Dad, and hello, Mom, hello, Kiki, hello, George A's, and hello, Uncle Max. It's real unusual about getting the commentary on as far as your job, Dad, and I had other few other unusual things like George A's, Kiki's, and Uncle Max's voice. And I'm sure that Uncle Max has more to say than he did. Maybe he's had enough time to think of something for this next tape if you do the same thing over again. Seems like Kiki had a little trouble on the tape. I just heard nothing but mics getting clicked on and off between words. I don't know if it was a problem with the tape recorder, like they said, or probably it's a little of being in... not used to talking on a tape, but I think that should clear up here pretty soon. And you also mentioned the tape that when I wrote the last letter, I had 104 days left. Well, now I've got 89, actually 88 days in a duffel bag drag. So that's real good. I've taken some real good pictures of different areas since you've last heard. I don't know what the volume of this thing is set up. Let me look here. I'm going to replay it and find out. Seems all right. I think this tape recorder records it a set volume, and just to be sure about it, I just turned it down because I had to turn it up real high, but it seemed to record on the playback. It seemed to be normal, so I guess that's all right. Now, first of all, before we get any farther, I'd like to answer George H.'s questions. Number one question, what is a slick? Or I guess you know what a slick is, but where did the word originate? Well, it's sort of a thing, and when you're in Vietnam, the people in Vietnam develop a slang or whatever have you. Just about every field of endeavor has its own language, such as the astronauts and their go and green and all this business. In Vietnam, we have all kinds of sayings, and one of them is that we call a slick or a Huey or a UH-1 troop carrier is called a slick. Now this originated back in early in Vietnam when the U.S. first came over here. They had the older model UH-1s, and UH is sort of short. Instead of everybody saying this is a UH-1 Iroquois, which is its proper designation, they just called it a Huey. Okay, and then they had Hueys. Well, first when they came over here, all they had was Hueys and H-21s. They called the H-21s bananas. The Huey, people actually, in the beginning, were feeling that the Huey, they were felt awful unprotected in it. So they started adding armament systems, jerry-rigged type. They hang rockets out of it, and everything was rockets and machine guns, and all this stuff was mounted on the sides. And they called this a gunship. And the model that carried troops had nothing on their sides. In other words, its configuration was slick. It had a slick outside skin. And troop ships from then on were called slicks. Now you got your Chinooks, CH-47s are nicknamed hooks. And your CH-54 is the flying crane. It hasn't really developed a nickname so far, except a hurricane maybe. So that's where your slang comes from. And now the Cobra is actually slicker than a slick is, but it's still called a gunship or a Cobra. And the snake, the word that they're developing for it now, this sort of the slang term is snake. So you hear a gunship calling up, as far as your combat assault goes, a flight leader calls a flight leader and says, this is so-and-so, and I've got two snakes today. And it tells him he's got two Cobra gunships escorting him today. So if you hear the word snake, it's a Cobra gunship. If you hear the word gunship, it's a regular Huey gunship. If you hear the word slick, that is a Huey troop carrying. And you mentioned that our main mission was carrying troops and so forth. You said recon was for some other mission. However, we do everything that is possible by aviation except armed escort. So we do recons, we do command and control, we do logistical resupply. And we'd carry troops, we'd carry generals, we'd carry Playmates of the Year, you know, for Playboy magazine, carry Bob Hope, anybody that's over here that needs to go from one place to another will go by helicopter, and we do all that. So that answered the other one. The other one was this four-letter initials, the peoples run around in the Australian bush hats and so forth. The four letters were LRRP, Long Range Reconnaissance Patrol, and a six-man team goes out in the boonies all by itself and recons the enemy, counts the enemy and so forth. And when I was working for them for a week, my job was to insert them. You know, all you had was one single slick, or possibly three slicks, two is used as decoys, so that when you insert these people without anyone knowing about it, in other words, they'd be undetected and they could stay in a command post, be real quiet, without the enemy knowing they're there. They're very successful. They operate on the same type of basis as the Special Forces Green Berets. So I guess that should answer your questions. They dress a little different. They use the tiger fatigues, which you saw. On their day off and stuff, they're filling sandbags. They might dress in the normal, ordinary fatigues. They wear the bush hats. They wear them out in the field. They're not allowed to wear steel pots out there because of they set up a silhouette. And an American steel pot is known everywhere as a special design. And anybody sees one and knows it's an American, they'll apt to be spotted and killed. So they were all kinds of groovy disguises. And that should take care of your questions. If you've got any more, I'd be happy to answer them. And I don't remember some of the questions Dad has. When I get back, I'll be back for a month. And I'll maybe I'll be able to take care of it and get everybody their share of war stories and be uptight. Now, I don't remember what I said in the last letter. I'm sure you knew that we assaulted Quezon, bailed the Marines out of trouble, and I don't know what type of paper coverage we got on that. However, if we hadn't gone there, the Marines had definitely been in a hurt. The Marines, every time anything is ever written up in the paper about somebody doing something, the Marines are always mentioned. The Marines did this, the Marines did that. And as far as I'm concerned, they could phase out the Marines, and it would probably be a smart move on the War Department, because Marines are designed to assault islands from the sea, and they are not doing any of that over here, and consequently they're very poor in fighting the type of war that is going on here. The one division of army or type with an aircraft and so forth to their disposal, the Marines have none of this. The Marines have very poor equipment, very poorly subsidized by the armed forces, and their mission is to do something that they're not completely prepared for. And I don't think there'd be any reason to have Marines in the future. However, they always seem to get their names. The gung-ho son of a guns have a good PIO system, I'll say that. PIO is Public Information Office, so that'll answer that. But the 1st Cav has gained most of its glory from saving the Marines out. First the Idrang Valley, then Bong Song, I Corps, Quezon, and the Marines wouldn't even touch the Ashaw Valley. We assaulted and took it in one day. So the Marines' philosophy on something is to take a hill. They start from the bottom up, and they call storm it. Now, the Cav, they just drop their people on the top. You've already got the hill that way, so you know nothing lost. We took up two brigades, or in other words, six battalions of Cav personnel, and surrounded Quezon and completely relieved it of an enemy situation. We've only got two battalions left up there now after we've taken care of them. We left them up as sort of a precautionary force to make sure they don't beat up on the Marines again. The poor, you know, the guys really can't take care of them themselves. They have a lot of things that the Army has, but they don't use them like the Army does. Their artillery and so forth, they've only used it in defense. The Army uses artillery and harassment and interdiction, offensive maneuvers and everything else. We're firing, I'd say the Cav by itself fires, 6,000 or 7,000 tons of artillery a day. There's always firing going on. Most of it, they fire maybe 1,000 tons a night, all the artillery batteries that we have, just for H&I fires, keep Charlie awake all night long. A lot of their tactics are so old, they wouldn't have worked back in the Second World War, let alone the Vietnam War, and so forth. They're really an obsolete unit, and if the War Department is smart, they'll probably phase them out, use the money elsewhere, either for the Army or for the Navy. Okay, now, I don't know if you heard us assaulting the Ashaw Valley. That was held top secret information until, I think, a week ago Thursday. And so what we did here is actually it all started April 19th. I don't know if you heard it. We assaulted the 3rd Brigade and a little bit on the northern end of the Asheville Valley. And 1st Cavalry Division took extremely heavy aviation losses. And I was really lucky that day. So close yet so far, but I guess close only counts in horseshoes and artillery. But really lucked out. I took the first round in my aircraft that I've ever taken in country, and I took that in a rotor blade. So that doesn't hurt anybody up there. If I've got to take a round in the aircraft, I just as soon as it's in a rotor blade as any place. And after that, well, we waited a day because of weather. Then the day after, we assaulted one more battalion and completed a brigade. I waited one more day and then for weather, and then the fifth day after the initial assault, we assaulted the 1st Brigade in down on the Alooey Airstrip, which was later named LZ Stallion. So far, since April 19th, we've been operating the Asheville Valley. No U.S. forces have operated there in force for the last 2 years. Now, I worked for the Special Forces about a month and a half prior to this assault, and all I did was drop recon teams, LRRP, you know, LRPs, recon teams in the Asheville Valley. And at the Asheville Valley, I was put in for a Silver Star there. I don't know whether I'm going to get that or not, for extracting a team under that was surrounded by a battalion of NVA. But I don't know if that'll ever come through or not. And also on April 19th, on the initial assault in there, I was put in for another Distinguished Flying Cross. And to tell you the truth, I'm getting a little bit too short to mess around like I've been doing, I'll tell you right now. But so far I've won the DFC already once, and now I'm getting another DFC and a Silver Star. It's pending at this time. I don't know whether for sure I'll get it or not, but I hope so. I think I deserved it. And ever since then, we've been operating and hauling log. We've completely owned the Asheville Valley. We've probably captured 9 or 10,000 weapons, personal weapons. We've captured, I say, almost 1,000 crew-served weapons, which include 37 millimeter guns, anti-aircraft guns, 50 calibers, 51 calibers, 52 calibers, and 54 calibers. We've also captured rocket launchers, rockets, ammunition, and I'd say tens of thousands of small arms ammo and about 3,000 or 4,000 rounds of this 37 millimeter anti-aircraft, which puts out what you call flak, has airbursts and so forth, like World War II, you know, 12 o'clock high. And we haven't had too much contact, though. We figured out it was mostly support troops down there. It was a big logistics base, and we've probably cleaned them out of a year's supply of logistics there. Out of those thousands of bolt-action rifles that were captured. Bolt-action rifle is legal war trophy material, so I got one of them, and I'm having it registered, and I'll be bringing it home with me. It was built in 1955. This is a Chinese Type 53 bolt-action rifle, 7.62 caliber. Also, an identical brother came in the same package. It was a 1944 model AK-44, which is a Russian bolt-action job, and they're exactly identical, part for part, except this other one was 1944, and mine was made in 55 by the Chinese. They're identical, and I'll be bringing this home. When I found it was all packed away in a mummy. Those things had been packed away since 1955. It's come complete kit. It's just a complete kit for two men. Two rifles are packed together, all taken apart, all filled with Cosmoline. Come with ammo, they came with the oiling kit and the tool kit and the whole bit. All came in the same mummified sealant deal. And we took them apart, put them together, and fired it a couple times. It fires real beautiful. It's definitely a high-powered rifle. I'll be bringing that home with me. I'll be bringing home some empty cartridges, too, so that I can get some ammunition for it when I get back, either reload the stuff I've got or see if I can find somebody to manufacture it in the States. It's an outstanding weapon. However, I'm just going to fire it once in a while. I'm not going to use it for deer hunting or anything. Sort of a trophy. I don't know if you heard about this. I picked up another weapon. The Russian assault rifle, the AK-50. It's a automatic weapon. It's got folding stock on it. It's a real beautiful weapon, and I use that for my own personal weapon. I don't think my .38. Would protect me in a situation that I might need it. However, it's better than nothing, of course, and it's a little bit handier to carry around. I would carry the M16 because the M16 is a superior weapon to the AK-50 in lightness and construction and so forth. However, the AK-50 is supposedly more durable under adverse conditions such as dirt and rain. But the reason I carry my AK-50 is because it's got a folding stock and it's only about 12 or 14 inches long when it's all folded up, and it's real easy to handle. The M16 is about a little over 3 feet long, and it kind of gets busted, and, you know, it get it wedged wrong, it'll go through your windshield and everything else. It just doesn't fit right in the front of a helicopter. However, I haven't been using my AK-50 lately, I've been using my M16 instead. But that's just a sidelight. I was sorry to say I didn't take too many pictures up in the Quezon area. I would like to have taken Quezon. I have landed at Quezon, and I got several weeks I flew up around Quezon area, but I didn't get any pictures that I can remember taking right now of the base, Quezon base itself, or anything else. I'm sorry I didn't do that, but I won't have a chance, I don't believe, anymore. However, I did get quite a few pictures of the Ashaw Valley. Not on the first few days, mind you, I was too busy flying, dodging bullets and so forth. But I did get some later when it kind of cooled down. We finally had the Ashaw Valley in our possession. Right now there's a helicopter hovering outside my tent, so I'm going to stop here until it sets down and shuts down. Yeah, well, it's finished hovering around now. I'm blowing everybody away. I just went over and traded a warm Coke for a cold one, so now I'm drinking a cold one. And sort of relaxing in my bunk here. As soon as I get done with this tape, I got to clean up my area. I got the day off today, finally. I have flown 130 hours in the last 30-day period, which is a lot of flying. It's hard on the old rear end there. I don't know how comfortable those seats were when they were new, but they sure aren't very comfortable now. But seems like we've done about everything the cab can do. I foresee moving down south now, down in the Tucor area around Saigon. At least that's what some of the rumors are, and usually the rumors sooner or later come out to be true. I heard back in Enclave we were going to move north. Nobody believed it. We finally moved north. And I heard when we got to Fubai, we were going to move north again. Nobody believed that, but we did. And then rumors while we were at Camp Evans that we were going to Quezon. Nobody believed that, but we did. And then also at the same time, I heard there's a big buildup in the Ashaw Valley, and nobody believed that, but we did. So there's just about no place left where there's any enemy strongholds. And whatever you hear in the papers, we're definitely, any time we engage anybody, we win. It's the idea of they don't seem to ever run out of VC. I don't know, we've killed thousands and thousands and thousands since I've been here, and they just never seem to run out. If I was a VC, I wouldn't even come to South Vietnam, because the superior firepower we have as compared to them is just frightening. And it's just a suicide mission as far as I'm concerned, even tangling with the U.S. or South Vietnamese forces in Vietnam, or any allied forces, Australians and Koreans. I guess it's up to them, though. There's so many of them, I guess we'd probably never run out of people. I hope these peace talks get someplace, but maybe they will, maybe they won't. Maybe I'll be coming home early. I hope if I come home early, I hope it's for coming peace talks other than any other reason. So far, I've been real, real lucky, and I definitely hope so. Hope I continue to be so lucky. But I've been over here a period of time that's been the worst as far as combat action goes in the history of Vietnam, and I've come out unscratched in every case. And I just to say something, I just mentioned this Ashaw bit. I've got an article that was in the Stars and Stripes, I'll send you, by Associated Press correspondent. I picked up one day and started shooting a bull with him. It turned out he did me a good deal and wrote my name in the paper, so since he was from Associated Press, I have an idea it'll probably be in everybody's paper back home, but this was in the Stars and Stripes, which is an all Allied Forces newspaper. It's printed by the U.S. government and given free to everybody. So I'll go ahead and send that home in case they don't put it in our paper. And I'm just about finished with this side of the tape. Not much else I can tell you, except war stories or something. I can give you a little...